President, President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me.
Yo! And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down. Audio Shop Talk brought to you in your ear hole by yours truly, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. This is the Fix Sports Podcast, the Fix Sports Podcast, Season 5, Episode 9. Yes, episode 9, and it's really going down on episode 9. We got a good episode for you today because we got a young man who's going to come through and drop a whole bunch of knowledge on your foreheads for this Life After Sports segment. My homie, Mr. Jarrell Webb, I Train 365 celebrity personal trainer, is coming through to talk about his time as an athlete and as well as his time transitioning and becoming a successful sports or successful personal trainer, rep. But before we get into all of that, you already know how we do. The Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora through their On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available on the website at www.ontheshouldersone.com. The On the Shoulders of Giants, the On the Shoulders of Giants online courses, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. The On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as face-to-face classes, educational sessions, keynote sessions, lectures, whatever you need from On the Shoulders of Giants, whether it's face-to-face or digital. And speaking of digital, remember, you can access that information through your smartphone, smart board, smart TV, or your tablet, or you can get them face-to-face. So visit the website at www.ontheshouldersone.com or www.ontheshoulders.org. That way you can get the stories of the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora, people you normally wouldn't learn about. All right, so Episode 9, we getting it done because, you know, we got that time, and we on the grind. Hey, and we on the grind. So give you a rundown real quick. HBCU Spotlight, talking about the L.A. Rams, they hire a former Hampton quarterback to be a part of their front office. So the L.A. Rams have done that. The second part of our HBCU Spotlight is Clark Atlanta's Lynch collecting devices for students in need during this Rona outbreak, right? Then, like I said, our Life After Sports segment, we are interviewing the one and only Mr. Jarrell Webb, the celebrity personal trainer, Jarrell Webb, talk about his time as a football player, as an athlete, going to college playing ball, looking to make it to the NFL, not making it, being able to transition from a life of sports to a successful career as a celebrity personal trainer. And then our weekly rant is aimed at hackers that posted racial slurs on the NHL site about black hockey players, black prospects, and all of that. So, you know, we're going to go in on them and give them the biz nasty, because we don't like all that stuff, Ryan. Well, I don't know why people can't just be nice, but you know what time it is, though, now. You know what time it is, though, now. That HBCU Spotlight, that's down. Get down. And it go a little something like this. That HBCU spotlight, that shot. Is you know, we're going to have to give you that information that you need one time for your mind. So the LA Rams hire former Hampton QB in their front office. So, excuse me. Another former HBCU quarterback has landed a job with the LA Rams. Former Hampton quarterback Jalen Williamson has been hired by the NFL franchise as its player engagement fellow. Williamson will assist the programs that support rookies transition mentally, physically, and financially as they adjust to life in the NFL. It will also help provide resources and programs for current athletes to set them up for success on and off the field and focus on the personal and professional growth of NFL players and their families during their playing career and life beyond the football field. A star quarterback at Oscar High School in Chesapeake, Virginia, he took his talents to Hampton in 2012. He was a three-time starter at quarterback before an injury caused him to miss his entire senior season. He returned to finish his career and earned all MEAC honors to cap a career that included records for most passing yards in the game with 407 and completions with 32. Since graduating, he's interned in the MEAC office and the Department of Compliance and Championship. We are excited for Jalen, MEAC's Commissioner Dr. Dennis E. Thomas said. One of the goals of our internship program is to provide the interns real work experience and improve their skill sets so they would be more attractive to the workforce. Jalen continues a long line of interns who have moved on to gain meaningful employment, and we wish them well. And those are the words of Dr. Dennis E. Thomas, the MEAC Commission. Also last month, the LA Rams hired former Winston-Salem quarterback to start Last month, the Rams hired former Winston-Salem State star and NFL quarterback Torrey Woodbury as an assistant coach after he served as a scout previously. So look at the Rams out here giving chances to people from the HBCU. So we want to go ahead and put our hands together for that young man. He made that front office. Oh, yes, he did. He made that front office. Jalen Williamson. Look at Jalen Williamson. Make the front office for the Rams. So one time for Jalen Williamson out here doing big things in this post football career and becoming a player engagement fellow for the Los Angeles Rams. One time for your mind, Jalen Williamson, one time for your mind. All right, second part of our HBCU spotlight, Clark Atlanta's Lynch collecting devices for HBCU students in need. So what does that mean? So, Clark Atlanta basketball head coach George Lynch has launched a national campaign to get devices in the hands of HBCU student athletes who need it. The COVID-19 virus has shut down campuses all across the country and switched to online learning. But students without reliable devices are at a clear disadvantage. I've witnessed dozens of student athletes scramble during this pandemic to get laptops to take home, says Lynch. Many of them were using school resources now they have to find their own. Some are even going back to homes where there isn't Wi-Fi to support their schoolwork. Something has to be done to assist them. We will not let COVID-19 get us down. HBCU heroes stand strong with you during this time. And remember that we are collecting donations for student athletes in need of personal computer laptops. To learn more, check out our website. And I think that was a tweet. So I'll do my best to get that website for you all. It's www.hbcuheroes.org. But during his time at CAU, Clark Atlanta Lynch has launched the nonprofit program HBCU Heroes along with Atlanta entrepreneur Tracy Pennywell. The computer campaign is just one of many efforts to benefit HBCUs to put together put together by HBCU Heroes. Our goal is to ensure all HBCU athletes have the resources to help them compete academically and athletically, said Pennywell. We are asking for HBCU alumni, philanthropists, professional athletes, corporations, organizations, etc., podcast hosts, everybody, to donate to HBCU Heroes so we can purchase and provide as many laptops as possible to support these students. Our goal is to give away 6,000 computers nationwide, asked Lynch. Once again, to become a community partner in this initiative, visit www.hbcuheroes.org. Once again, that's www.hbcuheroes.org. And y'all know how we do round here on this Fix Sports podcast. When somebody out there doing that thing in that community, that's why we got to go ahead and put y'all hands together. Coach George Lynch for out here making sure these students got these laptops. Who they were? Coach. One time for Coach Lynch. All right. Once again, our website is www.hbcuheroes.org. And you, too, can help make sure that young men have their, or not just the young men, but the HBCU student athletes have the equipment that they need to make it through school and do their work during this time of this Rona outbreak. And that, my friend, has been the HBCU. Like that for the HBCU spotlight, and I want to make news. All right, we're getting back to our Life After Sports segment, and as I told you all in previous podcasts, the reason I do this Life After Sports segment is to give all of you listeners information on being able to transition from the world of sports to successful life after sports. I myself didn't know how to do that. So I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of people that I meet who've actually had that successful transition. And today's show is actually going to be dedicated. The whole show is dedicated to that. This gentleman, I met him in high school, actually played football together in high school. He was one of the gentlemen who we knew was going to make it. We didn't really worry about him not being able to make it because of the head that he had on his shoulders. He's a really bright young man, and he was determined to make something out of himself. Played collegiate football, then became a celebrity personal trainer. Now, everybody don't get a chance to do that. So I want all of you to pull out your pen and your pad. Make sure you take notes so you can learn about a true transition from the world of sports to a world after sports and still be able to be as successful as you want to be and as competitive as you want to be if that's your lane. So I'm welcoming a good brother, Mr. Jarrell Webb. Thank you for being on the Fix Sports podcast today, brother.
Yo, man, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate all those kind words. I hope I can stand up to all of that.
Man, you are doing it, brother. Like, you are doing it. Like I say, just to be able to see you on your journey, see you doing your thing, see what you have built. I train 365, and you have a very, very, very successful platform. So we want to learn all about how you became as successful as you are today. So kind of want to start at the beginning. So can you give us some background information about yourself, how sports has impacted your life, and why you chose to become a fitness trainer?
Yeah, man. I mean, I can start from the beginning. I've been playing sports, you know, man, growing up in Florida. We started early, so I started playing football when I was 7. And I played, you know, all the way up through and a little bit after college. And then, you know, after that, I went to Middle Tennessee State University, played free safety and cornerback there. And then, you know, life happened. You know, unfortunately, everybody doesn't get to go to the big leagues. You know, more people don't make it that do make it. And I was one of the ones who didn't make it. And sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with being good enough or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's a game of numbers sometimes. So right. Then, like you said, it's trying to figure out what are you going to do next. And, you know, for a time, you know, I was lost and didn't know what I wanted to do. But I've always loved working out. So even after I stopped playing ball, you know, I kept working out and I stayed in shape. And then I ended up helping some other people get in shape. You know, they asked me, hey, could you come show me around the gym? And I did that. And, I mean, I guess you can say the rest is history after that, brother.
Okay. So, because I want to ask this particular question because I know what it was like for me when I found out that I wasn't going to really be playing football in college or after college. So, because you said you were lost for a while. So, during that period when you were lost, how were you able to kind of manage your mental state, and how did you believe in yourself in the beginning when it comes to fitness training?
Yeah, man. So if I can quote the late great Nipsey Hussle, he talks about his journey and just how, you know, he experienced every emotion, you know, and I feel him so much on that. You know, I literally went through every emotion. You know, I went through times where I wanted to quit. I went through times where, hell, I did quit. I went through, you know, the good times, the bad times. And just like, you know, sports, and that's the thing, you know, how the two worlds kind of parallel with sports and business is, you know, sometimes you're gonna get knocked down. And it's about what happens after you get knocked down. Sometimes you're going to run into somebody that actually is better than you, bro, you know? And then it's like, how do you respond to that? And sometimes, you know, you got to hit somebody that's bigger than you. You know, we played sports and we played in an environment where where fear wasn't allowed. So, you know, you dig back into all those bags and you pull from those things when you get down, when you get low. And then you just start to believe in yourself and just know that if anybody can make it, that means that I can make it, right? So it's not impossible if somebody's already doing it. So then you draw from that and you just push forward, right? You just keep pushing forward and you don't let the chips fall where they may.
Exactly. Now, I definitely agree with that because, like you said, the environment that we came from playing high school football, fear was definitely not allowed. And still to this day, that helps me because I just go into certain situations with no trepidation, and I see other people may think twice about it. But, you know, that was – we was trained from an early age, and just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. What you scared for? You scared, go home, man. That wasn't really allowed. So it's kind of the same thing in business, man. You know, the people who are not afraid to mess up, you know, like my coach would always say, if you're going to mess up full speed. You know, don't mess up halfway. Like, so if you're going to mess up full speed and then learn as you go. You know, it's the same thing in business. Okay, I messed up. I can go back and fix that because I know why I messed up back, at least I tried. And if you're not failing, then you're not trying.
There you go. So earlier you said you introduced to sports like football around the age of 7. So, like, how were you introduced to football, and why was football the sport that you chose over other sports?
Well, football chose me, man. My mom put me in football at 7. You know, typical black male story. I grew up in a single parent household. I have two older sisters, so I was the only male in the house. Mm-hmm. My mom felt like I needed to. Feel like, you know, I need to toughen up and I need to be around some male influences. So she put me into football. And she still talks about to this day. She says, I've never thought it would take you where it took you. I was just trying to get you, you know, some positive male role models in your life. And you end up falling in love with it. And that's just kind of how it happened, man. You know, I started off playing football. I ran track in high school as well. I did weightlifting in high school as well. So, you know, those are my other sports. But football was always my first love.
Okay. Yeah, you were a gym rat. Like, you were built like an action figure in high school. Because, you know, you're older than that. So we was always in the weight room. Like, man, we trying to get our muscles bigger, man. But that dedication, like, it was really amazing to see the dedication that you had to your body and health at such a young age in high school, because it's like we're still trying to figure out life. Well, you had that focus on, I'm going to make sure that I master everything that I do. And so that was something that we definitely admired about you from afar.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I was never the biggest, strongest, or fastest, but I was always I was always willing to outwork anybody, and that's still true to this day. I might not be the best at what I do, but I won't be outworked. If I lose, it won't be because you outworked me, because you just were better than me. And I'll go back to the drawing board and figure out what I can do to be better. So next time I see you again, you know, the playing field will be even, so to speak.
There you go.
So I've always kind of had that mentality, man. I've been willing to work for whatever I wanted, and put the grind behind it. And the results happen, man. You know, the results happen after that.
It definitely happened. Like, but I want to ask this: did you ever imagine being where you are today, as far as like athletics and training, when you were in high school? What was your actual goal? Was it the league, or you just wanted to be successful? Period.
Yeah, man. So I had one goal, and that was go to the league.
Okay.
That's all I've ever wanted. You can talk to anybody who's ever known me, and that's always been my number one goal. And I think, you know, even when I go and talk to kids now, is what I tell kids is don't have a plan B. I didn't have a plan B, because plan B distracts from plan A. So even if plan A doesn't work out, you know that you did everything you could do, and so you're comfortable walking away from it. So when it was my time to leave the game, you know, when I was done with the game, and when the game was done with me, whatever, however you want to look at it, you know, I knew I left everything out there. There was nothing more that I could do. It just wasn't for me. And that was the part that was hard, you know, to deal with, that it wasn't for you. So now you got to figure out what's next and whatever God has planned for you that is going to be better than what you had planned for yourself. So you'll be able to impact more people, or whatever God has planned, you have to be okay with that. And so that's kind of the part that got me through those tough times, is knowing that, you know, whatever God has planned for me, it wasn't football, but whatever it is, it's gonna be big, it's going to be better, and, you know, I'm still chasing that part of it now.
That's excellent. Like, everything you were saying, but I appreciate you understanding that having that plan A and being focused on that plan A is critical. You know, and parents, they are doing their best to make sure we're successful, and other adults, but a lot of time, you know, they teach having plan A, B, and C sometimes.
Right.
You know, like you said, having that backup plan, for a lot of people, will cause them to not put all their focus into that one thing that they want to do.
Exactly. And there's different dimensions to plan to that plan, right? So playing football was plan A, but you also know that playing football, a part of that is going to college. And if you want to go to college, that means you got to have good grades. And if you got to have good grades, that means you got to study and do your homework. You know what I mean? So it's different dimensions. Right. So a lot of times our parents and you know, our elders are telling us, you know, the safe way to do it. And, make sure you have a plan B in case plan A doesn't work out. And I understand from a safe planning standpoint why they would say that. But, you know, if I'm focusing on three different plans at one time, then none of those plans are getting my full attention. So you need, you know, whatever your plan A is, empty the bucket on that. You know what I mean? Like, get everything you can out of it And if all you get, you know, is a college degree, then that's more than enough. You know what I mean? That's more than enough. Right. And you just have to move on and figure out what's next after that.
There you go. Man, I appreciate you saying that because these are things like the reason why I do these interviews and these segments on this show particularly is to make sure I give specific information. One is to kind of, especially for families, to get them to understand that it's not their children's job to save the family through athletics. Like you're talking about developing your mental. If you teach a child certain skills and they learn certain things that can never be taken away from them, whether athletics work for them or not, they can still be successful. Athletics is a means to an end. It's not the end.
Right. Because you got to think about it. I mean, the average career in the league is 3 years. So that means you're 24 when you're done with the game. So that's a lot of life left. And even if you're blessed enough to play, let's say, 10 years, that means you're 30, 32 at the most. That's still a lot of life left, you know, to live. So what are you going to do with the rest of those 60 years of life after football? And hopefully you made, you know, good investments with your money that you made from the league so you don't have to necessarily get a job. But what if you didn't? Like, you know, especially the way we grew up, we wanted, you know, the people who had money was the dope boys. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the people that we saw in our neighborhood that had money. So it was for real for us. It was go to the league or sell dope. If you wanted to have money, that's what we saw. So mine was go to the league. My mama wasn't having that dope boy stuff.
Exactly.
So that was the only way that I could see myself being successful because of the environment that I was growing up in. But you know, exposure shapes reality. So as I saw more, I knew that there was more out there, and that, you know, going to the league or becoming a rapper or being a dope boy or whatever, that wasn't the only way to actually be successful and live the type of life that I wanted to live or take care of my mom or, you know, provide for my family. That wasn't it.
Right. Yeah. For me, the same thing. I mean, I thought about it, but then my thing was, all right, where am I going to put this dope? I'm not hiding nothing.
Right.
No way, I don't want to do this. It's a whole lot of stuff. But I think too hard about this, it's clearly not for me. So.
Right, yeah.
So we talked about, you know, one of the main things we both learned in high school was no fear. But what else did you learn from playing high school football that you took to college football that helped you be successful in college football?
Yeah, well, you know, once again, you know, our high school environment, our high school football environment was different than most, you know, now.
Exactly.
We had some very aggressive coaches, to say the least, you know what I mean? I'll say that. I'll leave it there. So that environment, it was a gladiator-style environment, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so by the time I got to college, you know, it was like, oh, this is easy. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't got to deal with a lot of the drama side of the game. I can actually just focus on football, and that be it. You know, I ain't got to worry about none of the other stuff. But to say all of that, you know, the way we grew up, you know, the way we played, it gave me an edge. It gave me a chip on my shoulder. So when I got to college, you know, I already had a certain swagger. I had that Florida swag already. I walked in thinking that, you know, I was the best, and if you was better than me, it was just because you're an upperclassman, and you know the coach is trying to get you in. It's not because you actually physically more talented than me. So it was that. It gave me, you know, our high school football gave me a confidence. It gave me a swag. It gave me the knowledge to know that, you know, there's nothing else they can do to me that hasn't already been done. You know, whether that's running, whether that's fighting, whatever, we can do whatever you want to do. We can go however you want it to go. I'm ready for whatever. So it's still that same mentality. You know, even like I said, in business now, we can do this however you want to do this. I'm prepared to go either way. And that kind of gives you that flexibility, you know, and how you can move. You know, if you can move in any circle, I think that's what makes you That's what makes you better. That's what puts you up at the top. You know, I can go home and hang in the hood, or I can go home and hang in Killarn in the expensive areas. It doesn't really matter to me. I can be in any environment, and that's what Rickards did. That's what Tallahassee did. That's what Tallahassee taught me. is that I can move in literally in any environment and be okay.
Right, right. Yes, definitely, definitely. And we see that because seeing you in especially the spaces where you are being interviewed on national TV, some of the talk shows and things that you've been on, and definitely proud of you for that because it's all shining through. It's all showing, like, everything that you've learned over the years from being a young man to where you are now is all coming through. So just know we all are here rooting for you, and we all here celebrating with you. Definitely know that.
I appreciate that, brother, man. I do, believe it or not, bro, I do it for y'all. I do it for the crib, man. So
yes, sir.
That means the world, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, say, you played at Middle Tennessee State. As a collegiate football player, what was one of your fondest memories of playing college football?
Man, there's a lot, brother. There's a lot. I think the one that I probably remember the most is going to Neyland Stadium. And I hate UT, University of Tennessee, but I remember being in that stadium, and it's like over 100,000 people, and that thing is rocking, bro. I didn't play. That was my freshman year. I didn't play at all. But I just remember looking around like, yo, this is, you know, this is not Gene Cox Stadium no more, bro. This ain't, you know, right. we was fronted. We got, you know, 5,000 people to come out to the game.
Right.
That was a packed house. So you go from that to, like, literally over 100,000 people in the stands, man. And they're all screaming Rocky Top at you. and then so it was like, wild. Yo, it's still bone chilling, bro. It's crazy.
Nah, that's cool. Now, that's real cool, because I know one thought that probably been going through my mind is, hey, I'm at the table. I'm here. I'm in college. I'm at least in this environment. So I just know all I have to do is get myself on the field, but you're in the environment. So that's important that you got to experience that.
Yeah, man. And I think, like, even the same thing, man. Like, you know, in business is – you know, if you're at the table, you're supposed to be there. And a lot of times, you know, we might be in a room where we're like, yo, this is a crazy room that I'm in. Am I supposed to be here? Yeah, if you're in that room, you're supposed to be there. Like you said, if you're at the table, then, you know, then it's time to eat. You know, if you're not at the table, then you're up for dinner. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not sitting at the table, then you dinner. You know? So it's one or the other. You pick. And I'd rather be at the table either day, any day.
Right, definitely. So, played college football, you played your years there, and you say you played a bit football after college?
Man, I had a couple of tryouts. I had a tryout in the CFL with the Calgary Stampeders. That didn't work out. Then I went down to Atlanta with the Georgia Force, and then I got cut there as well. Trained for a little bit. Another couple of small tryouts, then, you know, you just realize, yo, I'm kind of chasing my tail here. I'm not getting any younger. And I need to figure out, you know, what's next, because I don't think football is going to be it.
Right. Okay. And so how do you feel that your time playing football, high school, college, and then going through your experience after college, going through the trials, how do you feel that helped you in your life after sports?
I mean, I think sports gives you a confidence, man, that most people don't have. I think growing up the way we did gives you a certain edge that and a certain hunger that most people don't have, right? So, you know, if you've always had everything handed to you, then you don't know what it means, you know, to have to fight for stuff. If it's always been easy, then you quit when you face adversity. And so, you know, I still lean on those things now. And, you know, when times are hard, you know, I dig from those places of adversity. Like, I'm still unbreakable. I live by a quote, I'm invincible until I die, right? So it's literally on that. So maybe this time it doesn't work out, but what about next time? I can go back to the table and figure out, you know, how I can make it happen next time. So adversity for me, it just teaches you how to press forward. Where most people will quit, we know what it feels right. like to be there, and we know that when you feel like you're gonna die, you're not. You know what I mean? So
right.
most people
right.
feel like that's the time to quit, and for me, that's the time to keep pushing. Right?
There you go. There you go. That's definitely wise words. You only really lose when you quit,
absolutely.
I like your mentality because it's really similar to everybody who came from Rickards who went through it, who was out there on the field with us and went through it. We all I'm noticing as I talk to more people, we all have that mindset, and it's a bit different than people who went to other schools. And like you say,
yeah.
you had to be there to really experience and really understand fully what
right.
you're talking about, but the environment. You know?
Right. It was real life gladiator school, man.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right, so you transitioned into becoming a fitness trainer.
Yeah.
So when did you first realize that you could actually make money and make a living as a fitness trainer?
Man, that's a great question. So I tell this story all the time, man. I actually never wanted to be a fitness trainer or a personal trainer because, you know, growing up, like, the only people that we knew who did that type of stuff and made money was, like, Billy Blanks and, you know,
yeah.
like, people that we thought were lame, you know what I mean? And I was like,
exactly.
I'm not going to be, you know, getting on here dancing on camera. Like, what I look like? I could never go home if I did that. Like,
exactly.
But in my mind, that's all I knew about the industry, you know, was mm-hmm. those people. It was like Tybo, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I was
exactly.
like, yeah, that's not in my wheelhouse. So I had a great mentor who pulled me in and kind of showed me the game. He showed me business and that I had a talent and a skill. Kind of like you said, I've been, you know, unbeknownst to me, I've been doing this all my life, right? So
mm-hmm.
I've been preparing
mm-hmm.
for this moment all my life. So football was just a catalyst to show me and teach me how to work out, how to train hard, what that feels like, to teach me how to do exercises properly, to teach me how to work in a team environment, teach me how to be a leader. Football gave me all of that stuff, right? And so while at the time I thought that I was going to use all of that stuff only for football, it transitioned over into what I do now in the industry that I'm in now so well. So I started training in 2009, and it was literally somebody asked me to take them and show them how to work out, right? That she had never worked out
right.
before. She's like, can you just take me to the gym and just show me around? So I did that. Somehow that turned into personal training. She ended up losing like 65 pounds. And so it was actually her idea. She's like, yeah, you need to become a personal trainer. But then once again, I didn't know if I could make money doing that. I didn't know how to charge people.
Right.
Like, how much do people pay for personal training? So, you know, digging into that side of the business. And it's a process, man. You know, you start like with any business, you start low. And then as you get up, you build your rates. And you work your way out of, you know, whatever job. I've worked 2-3 jobs at a time, plus personal training, just to be able to chase that dream. And then, you know, eventually I built my clientele up enough to be able to sustain my lifestyle and make money off of it.
Wow, that's cool, man. That's definitely cool. And it's a process. But it's working.
That's what I always tell people and young trainers and anybody starting a business is like, it's a process. You don't go in day one and try to charge what I'm charging you because you don't have the experience that I have, or you know, you don't go in and think you're gonna make, you know, six figures your first year, you know, personal training. Like, come on now, it's a process, and you got to be willing to go through that process once again. You know, you got to be willing to eat hot dogs, bro. You got to be willing to eat ramen noodles. You know, you got to be willing to go through all that stuff, man.
This is Sam Carter. I love his quote, success is measured by sacrifice. And
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what you're explaining right there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Sam was a big influence in all of our lives.
Exactly.
You know, Sam gave us that swag. Sam gave us that confidence. You know, if you ever bumped into Sam, he never – he never showed any lack of confidence, man. So in order, if you go be around him, you know, or you know, have him coach you, you had to have a certain swag or a certain amount of confidence just to be able to be in the same area as him, or that was just like I said, that's the way we grew up.
Exactly.
So you have to be willing to sacrifice, and it's all about how much are you willing to sacrifice to become successful, or whatever your level of success is. You know, and most of the times people aren't willing to go as far as you are, and that's what separates the good from the great. That's what separates Michael Jordan, the Kobe, the LeBron. Because, you know, after the game, they're putting up another, you know, 300 shots while you're going home to spend time with your wife, you know. So it sacrifices.
Right.
You know, that's the time that when the lights are off, what are you doing when people can't see you? You know, when everybody's going home and you're still in their shoes, or you're still running sprints, or you're going to go work out, you know, that's what separates the good from the great. And some people are okay with just being good. Some people are okay with just getting a check and, you know, being able to, you know, have the white picket fence and the, you know, house and the dog, you know, and some of us want to be legendary, and that's the difference.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So who was the first celebrity that you trained, and how did that experience trickle to you training more celebrities and your name getting out there and helping you become an actual celebrity trainer?
Yeah, man, you know, celebrity is a... is a word that, you know, it depends on who you are. You know, a celebrity to me might not be a celebrity to you. And so, you know, for me, my first millionaire client was a celebrity because they wasn't in the league. They, you know, they go to work every day, bro. So for me, I was like, how did you make $1 million? How are you a millionaire and you didn't go to the league? You know, you never played sports. Like, how? You know, so for me, those were the people that that are celebrities to me, because for me, like that blew my mind. And so, you know, once you get one, you know, it kind of just becomes a trickle down effect. So, you know, you're in that circle. You know, it's no different than anything else. You know, if I started training T-Pain and he tweeted one time that, you know, or showed a picture of me and him working out, then guess what? All the people in T-Pain's circle are going to want to work out with me now. So that's how it works, man. You know, it's no different than, you know, anything else. People see you working with somebody like, oh, well, I want to work with them too. And then you kind of, you know, your name gets out and goes through those different circles like that.
Okay. Now, for those listening, I want them to get it clear. It's your quality of work, though, that allowed you to be in these spaces and be able to train these specific people and get these recommendations. So could you kind of expound on that, like kind of drive it home, like your quality of work, not just because you wanted it to happen?
Most definitely, man. It's definitely your quality of work, and it's definitely, you know, success is when opportunity meets preparation. So you need to be prepared, you know, no different than football. It's the next man up mentality. If somebody gets hurt, and you go in the game and you stinking it up, guess what? They're going to pull you out. You know what I mean? So, you can be the Tom Brady, and when somebody gets hurt, you go in and you never come back out. And now, you know, now this is my position. You know, so, and that's always my mentality is when I get the opportunity, I'm going to give it everything I got, and I'm going to give you the best that I got with that opportunity. So, especially when you're working with A-type personality people, you know, they demand a certain – they demand a certain product level. So they demand that you come in and be experienced. They demand you be professional. You know, and that means being on time. That means being respectable.
Right.
That means being prepared. Don't show up and just start making up a random workout right there. You know, that means being educated and knowing, you know, what you're working, why you're working that. These are the muscle groups that we work in, and being able to talk and break it down to that level. This is how this is going to help you in whatever it is you do, whether it is why are you on stage or why are you on the field or whatever it is. This is how this translates to what you're doing. So understanding the what, the whys, the hows, and really being an expert at what you do, you know, because you might get the opportunity, but you might blow it. So you want to make sure you don't blow it when you get the opportunity.
Right. Now, that's definitely true, and I appreciate you driving that point home. If you could pick, like, and sticking in the celebrity trainer mindset. If you could pick a couple celebrities or who would your dream celebrities be that you would just love to train, that you thought, man, if I could train that person, it would be so great?
It's a lot, bro. It's a lot of people that Beyonce, you know,
right.
Just because of her reach, you know what I mean? You know, one tweet from Beyonce is gonna set everything on fire.
Right.
Oprah, you know, those type of people like that, man, the people with big influence. I love Shannon Sharp, so I would love to work out or train Shannon Sharp or The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those probably be like my top four, though. So I would say Beyonce, Oprah, Shannon Sharp, and The Rock.
Now, that's a good list, though. That's a good list. And one of the reasons why I asked that is because to get our listeners to understand is that you still have dreams, you still have goals that you want to achieve, and you are highly successful now. But it's that drive, like we've been talking about this whole interview, it's that drive that we have to be legendary, to be on a whole nother level, not just good, but great. And so when you have that mindset, you want to go beyond the success that you have, but you're gonna revel in the success that you have, but you still want to set more goals and do new things.
Man, absolutely. You know, success is like, it's like Lay's potato chips, bro. You know, once you get a taste of it, you want some more. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I'm nowhere near where I want to be, bro. I got so much more that I want to accomplish and do in this industry. But at the same time, you know, you have to stop and smell the roses as well. That's one of the things that my wife always tells me. It's like, yo, you got to stop and smell the roses and know that you've done a lot. You've done enough. And enjoy what you've done. I know you got more goals, you know, but, you know, there's more out there, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when you sit down and you kind of look back at from where you started to where you are now, what are some of the thoughts that go through your mind? Are you just completely amazed? Is this what you expected? Like, what are the thoughts that go through your mind when you think about where you are right now as opposed to where you started?
Yeah, man. My first thing is, you know, God is good, brother. Mm-hmm. There is no way I could be where I am or doing what I'm doing without him. Like I said, I've quit this a lot of times, bro, just because it got tough and, you know,
right.
Always got pushed back into it, you know what I mean? So what's in you is going to be brought out.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I look back at, you know, where I started it, you know, and where I am, but, you know, I got to just say, you know, thank God for having a plan for my life, you know, even when I had no clue what that plan was. So those are my first thoughts. And then, you know, I go into, you know, I am proud of all that I've been able to accomplish and the people that I've been able to meet and work with and all of that, but I also know that there's more. So while I'm content, I'm not complacent. So I want more, and you know, like I'm probably hungrier than I've ever been right now, you know, because I just know there's so much more out there that I want to accomplish. There's so much more that I want to do for the city, you know. There's so much more that I want to do for my family. So, you know, that's stuff that drives me, man. While I'm happy, you know, with all that I'm doing and all that I have going on right now, I know that I still want, you know, a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of those mentalities that I believe that's a good mentality to have. But also, it sounds like you also understand balance, though. You understand sacrifice, but you do understand balance and knowing that I want to pursue these goals, but I do have this life that I created. So make sure that I still pursue my goals and do everything that I want to do, but make sure maintain balance and take care of home as well.
Absolutely, man. It's definitely a balancing act. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, there's no reason to be successful and not have nobody to share it with, bro. Like that's a part of being. That's part of my success story. Is, you know, for my family, for my wife, for my city to be able to, you know, take part in all of that. you know, if I can't go home, then what's the point of being successful? You know what I mean?
Right.
If people are looking at me like I turned my back or I changed on the city, you know, what's the point of my wife looking at me like, you know, all you do is work and you never give me any time, you know, what's the point? What's the point of all that? Or if I work, I become successful when she leaves me. You know, I'm like, what, that stuff doesn't matter to me. Like, when I dream of my success, it includes all of that. So you definitely got to, you know, learn how to balance all of it. You definitely got to have a lot of tough conversations about, you know, about work-life balance and stuff like that. So that's a part of it.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So early in the interview, we were talking about education. And
yeah,
how important is education in terms of being successful as an athlete and being successful as a business owner?
I mean, I think your education is part of what separates you. And be clear, education doesn't mean that you got to go to college or, you know, graduate college. That's not what I'm talking about. Education means that whatever industry, whatever field you're in, is that you become an expert in that. And the way that you become an expert in that is by studying the greats. And so if you want to be a basketball player, why would you not watch Michael Jordan highlights? Why would you not watch LeBron James? Why would you not watch Kobe, right? Because those are the best in that industry. So it's the same thing in business. You know, so in business, why would I not watch the Billy Blanks, bro, made $200 million. $200 million doing Tybo, and he's still selling more. So why would I not study that business platform of what he does? That doesn't mean I got to do everything he did, but understand from a business standpoint, this is what he did to make $200 million. You know, Richard Simmons, as much as you want to say for him, dude is close to being a billionaire, right? So why would I not study his business acumen? Like, it just makes sense, right? So understanding education is not, you know, that doesn't mean, when I leave high school, I got to go to college. Understanding education is learning everything you can about your industry, about your field, and about how to do your job so that you can be the best and most experienced person that you can be, right? So read, you know, read books on your industry, read, you know, study the great. That's how you become greater. It's by watching, you know, the people that already did it. You know, they already made 200 mil. So this is how they do it. This is how they did it. So studying those people and then just becoming greater from that. So education is everything, bro.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate you expounding on that. I'm always pushing that the ideas and the concepts of developing your brain, because nobody can take that away from you. Everything that you learn, everything that you've learned as a businessman, as a man, as an athlete, as just a person, nobody can take that away from you. So,
right. You'll never lose that. That's yours. So no matter what happens, if you know, if I lost everything today, I know how to get it back because of that education.
Right.
Right? I know how to rebuild it. You know, it's like if you know how to build a house and a tornado comes, then you ain't tripping because you know how to build a house. You know what I mean? Like, I can rebuild my house. I just need tools. So, you know, having that knowledge, nobody can ever take that from you, bro. So that's why it's important to study. You know, even the Bible says study to show thyself approved. So, you know, if God says to study, then you probably need to study.
right. Don't get no better than that. So. So we're down to our final question, and I want to know, what tips would you give to up-and-coming athletes who want to be successful in athletics and a world beyond sports?
Yeah, man, I would say, you know, empty the bucket. Like, do everything you can because you'll never get these days back, man. I mean, I was literally yesterday talking to my wife about playing football. And if I could just strap up one more time, right? I mean, it was all talk because ain't nobody hitting me right now. Like, I'm too old. But, you know, these are the best days of your life, man. So empty the bucket on this. Enjoy where you are now. And just understand that, you know, what will be. If it's meant for you to make it, then you're going to make it. If it's not meant for you to make it, that's okay. Like, you can. There's life after football. There's success after football, and for most athletes, and these are, you know, even professional athletes that I've that's played at the highest level that I've had the opportunity to work with and train is that they are trying to figure out how what to do after the game is over. You know, and these guys, still, like I said, they're 30, you know, but the game is over, and they've all they've done for the last 30 years is played their sport, played football, played basketball or baseball or whatever that thing is. So for 30 years, they've done one thing, and now for the next 40 years, 50 years, they got to do something totally different. So trying to, you know, figure out what happens after the game is you know, something that everybody goes through, professional athletes, you know, and people that didn't make it. So, you know, understanding that there's life after football, what's the plan when the game, what's the plan when the game is done with you, even if you make it, like, what do you plan on doing after you're done, after the game is done with you? So, you know, thinking about that and future planning, but also, you know, giving everything you got to it right now and using those lessons and those tools that you learn while playing the sport to take your life to the next level.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Man, I definitely appreciate you dropping all this knowledge off for my audience, giving up your time to be on my podcast. It's definitely,
no
definitely,
worries, brother.
Definitely appreciate it, man. Could you, before we close this out, could you give the people your contact information, social media, your websites, how somebody who listened to this and want to do some business with you, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, man. If you want to contact me, it's iTrain365 on all social media networks. iTrain365 TV on YouTube, and www.itrain365.com is my website. So yeah, man, hit me up. We out here.
All right. Y'all make sure y'all support the brother because he's out here doing great things in this world. Once again, Mr. Jarrell Webb, I appreciate you stopping by the Fix Sports Podcast, chopping it up with me. It's definitely appreciated. Once again, I'm proud of you, everything that you've got going on. And this network, this platform that we have, that we built, anytime you need a message to get out, if you got some things going on, you want to be interviewed about it, man, just hit me up and we'll definitely make it happen.
Absolutely, brother. I thank you, man. I appreciate you a lot.
No problem, man. I'll talk to you later.
You got it.
All right. Yes, sir. So that, once again, that was Mr. Jarrell Webb of iTrain 65. He is the creator, the owner of it. So all of y'all, put your hands together and show some love for the person. Yeah. When I'm doing these podcasts and I'm doing these interviews, like I keep saying, it's for a specific reason. And the reason is to make sure that we can really understand the totality of what it takes to be successful in the realm of sports, in the world of sports. Everybody who I've interviewed in this Life After Sports segment comes from a different angle, a different standpoint, a different viewpoint. But they're all giving a lot of similar information. So just make sure we take this information and we use it. And moving forward, we don't push the children into a continuous cycle of save the family, save the family, save the family, because that takes the fun out of athletics for a lot of kids. I'm telling you, it takes the fun out of athletics. It makes them not want to. It makes them not want to be athletes. It makes them not want to do it anymore because it's like a choice, a job. It's not something that we do for fun. So let's keep that in mind, man. So,
all right. Because it's time. It's time for my weekly rant.
And we're aiming this thing at the vile racist outbursts towards a black player on Zoom chat when it came to the NHL.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Let's get this thing. So, A hacker posted a racial slur hundreds of times during a Zoom fan chat on Friday with a black New York Rangers prospect. The NHL team scrambled to disable the hacker on the chat with K'Andre Miller, the 20-year-old, the Rangers drafted number 22 overall in 2018. A vile individual hijacked the chat to post racial slurs, which we disabled as soon as possible, the Rangers said in a statement. We were incredibly appalled by this behavior, which has no place online, on the ice, or anywhere, and we are investigating the matter. The hacker repeatedly posted the N-word in all capital letters on the Rangers' Future Friday series on Twitter. The NHL also released a statement saying the National Hockey League is appalled that a video call arranged today by the New York Rangers to introduce their fans to one of the league's incoming stars, K'Andre Miller, was hacked with racist, cowardly taunts. Old sucker. Jive turkey. So the person who committed this despicable act is in no way an NHL fan and is not welcome in the hockey community. See, that's where they're wrong. See, the first thing where you're wrong is to admit that that is an NHL fan. Now, of course, you're not going to claim that person, but that person is an NHL fan. You don't fight racism by trying to dismiss certain things, dismiss facts. The fact is that is an NHL fan. That person does like hockey. That person watches hockey. That person clearly engages in hockey chats and things like that. So that person is a hockey fan. You got to admit that hockey has racist fans. Now, the thing is to find them and eliminate them, but you cannot walk around acting like you don't know you got racist fans in the NHL. Come on now. Get your mind right now. Get your mind right, NHL. All right? I understand you want to say that there's no place for that in the NHL community. I get that. But let's not act like they're not. That's not present in the NHL community. All right, now get your mind right. No one deserves to be subjected to such ugly treatment, and it will not be tolerated in our league. We will join with the Rangers in condemning this behavior. Miller signed a 3-year contract a day before the NHL announced it was suspending the season because of the coronavirus. And this is a tweet by Jacob Truba. What happened today was inexcusable and cowardly. Racism has no place in the hockey community or the world. K'Andre Miller, we are excited to have you as a part of the New York Rangers, and I look forward to having you as a teammate. So Jacob Truba is a member of the New York Rangers. Rangers, and he's a defenseman for the Rangers. So forward Ryan Strome retweeted Truba's post, adding, "Couldn't have said it better. This team and this organization sticks together. You are one of us, and we have your back." Concerns around Zoom have been raised frequently in the last few weeks. One researcher described the platform as a privacy disaster. So some punk-ass coward decided to hack, to either, now, all right, they say hack. So this person either hacked the Zoom or the person was already a part of the Zoom because they got the invite to the Zoom. I'm definitely going to examine both angles. Now, racism happens. So they're saying it was hacked. Look like they're trying to cover their tracks on this. All right. Hockey know they already have racist fans. We go through this every year. Black players get hassled every year by white fans. So let's not act like this don't happen. So, air quotes, hacked. The Zoom was hacked. And somebody came in and started calling K'Andre Miller a nigga a million times on the Zoom. And now the New York Rangers are scrambling to do damage control because they don't want to look like an organization that houses racism and all these things going on here. But this punk-ass hacker that came in, clearly a coward. Whoever you are, you a coward, your mama a coward, your daddy a coward. If you got kids, your kids a coward, your dog a coward, your cat a coward, your hair a coward, your house a coward, your carpet a coward, your granddaddy a coward, your school teacher a coward, your football coach a coward, your everything about you is coward. Hope you never reproduce again, right? Because we're in a day now where internet thugs exist, right? So with the internet thug episode or this explosion that's going on, people feel mighty brave behind them keyboards. And we, nobody would say that in front of K'Andre Miller, especially knowing that K'Andre Miller might swing them, right?
depending on what type of black dude K'Andre Miller is. His name K'Andre, so I'm guessing he might have been in a couple fights in his life, unless he just come from a bougie background with a hood name. But he do got a hood name. His name is K'Andre. So I'm just saying, I'm just assuming dude have been in a couple fights in his life because, you know, he might be from around where I'm from, right? But most of the time, these folks not going to say this to your face. So this punk ass decided, I'm going to go on this Zoom chat and call this man a nigga a million times. And that's one of the things about this white supremacy. It's out here. It exists. It's still in existence. It's not going nowhere until white people decide to stop doing dumb stuff like that. Right? Because this person clearly went out of their way to do this. Clearly went out of their way to do this. Put a lot of time and effort into making this happen. They some bitches. Let's just be real. They some bitches. They born a bitch. They lived a bitch. And they probably going to die a bitch. Because they're not going to say that stuff to that man's face. Right? K'Andre. You already know they ain't going to say that to your face. Right? Your name K'Andre, bro. They ain't going to try you like that. Your name K'Andre. But they some goddamn cowards, man. And that's what's going on in this world. America hasn't changed much. Let's just call it what it is. America is just as racist today as it was in the 1600s. America is just as racist today as it was when the first Europeans landed anywhere in the Americas and started killing off people, started telling people that their gods were wrong, started telling people that their lifestyles were wrong, started telling people that they were second-class citizens, started telling people that their black skin wasn't bad, started telling people that they couldn't do it, they couldn't become successful. America hasn't changed much. America is just as racist today as it was then. America is just better at hiding its racism today as it did then. So you can lull people to sleep while still be racist undercover, but then you still have people like whoever hacked this Zoom chat and also people like Donald Trump who put their racism to the forefront, right? Instead of hiding their racism is out in the open in the forefront. And, you know, it depends on how you like your racism. Me, I like my racism out in the forefront. I like to know who's who, what's going on, what's going down, how it's going down, how it's been down, why it's going down, and where it might go down next. Right? So it's unfortunate that this young man had to deal with this. I don't know if this is his first time dealing with something like this or not. It most likely isn't, but it could be. But America hasn't changed. America is still a very, 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 very racist place. But I do think the New York Rangers dropped the ball in terms of not acknowledging that, hey, man, we had a racist on our platform. This racist is probably a Rangers fan. But what we would do is eliminate this player from our fan base instead of trying to act like it was just some outlying thing, just like they don't have racist people within their organization. Other racist people probably just got a lot more sense or a little more calm about it. But this person who hacked this thing is most likely a supporter of the New York Rangers, right? And, you know, I know they're saying that the thing was hacked, but I doubt that the Zoom was hacked. I doubt that the Zoom chat was hacked. I most likely lean toward that Zoom, that person being somebody who had access to the Zoom chat the regular way and was on there and decided to just go off. I believe that more than I believe it was hacked. But I do want the Rangers to acknowledge that racist people are hockey fans and racist people are New York Rangers fans. Instead of trying to act like this was some fly-by-night thing, I mean, racism exists. Like, white people are racist. White people like hockey. It's too many white people in hockey for it not to be white people who support racism and white supremacy in hockey. Think about the number of white people and white owners, just white people involved in football, and how many of them we know NFL owners support white supremacy. So why wouldn't NHL owners, players, and fans to white people support white supremacy? Now, that's not saying that all would, but that is saying that some of there are some white supremacists somewhere in there. Some of them might just be smart enough to know when to show it and when not to show it, or how to do it, rather than this person who was on the Zoom, who decided to call Keandre Miller a nigga a million times. So fuck that person. Like, that's not cool to do. That's extra ignorant, but that's what racist people do. So don't forget. That's why Buford keep telling y'all that he don't like your kind. To remind you that racism is still alive, they just be concealing it. And then this era of Trump, they're not even concealing it no more. But I would rather know who my racist is up front than be on some behind-the-back stuff. You heard me? Because, hey, man, look, we ain't got no time for this, but we do have to fight back as black people. We got to find the best ways for us to fight back, to quell these racist attacks that we get all the time from these white folks. Because most of the time, you know, they're not going to really run up on us. But when they do, you got to be ready. But all just from all fronts, man, understand the art of war and understand system of racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it exists, the history of it. Because if you don't, everything else will only confuse you. Hey, man, I am Joseph Ward. Once again, thank you to my homie, Mr. Jarrell Webb, for stopping by, dropping some dimes and some information on us about his time as an athlete and transitioning from a life of an athlete, of a football player, to a successful celebrity personal trainer. So shout out to Jarrell and wish him much success moving forward. And, you know, this is the Fix Sports Podcast. Remember, y'all can support your homeboy on Patreon, patreon.com/fix. Remember, visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You know, we're available on all podcasting platforms, Stitcher, Radio Public, iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, whatever you listen to your podcast, that's where we at. And we can get down, we can stay down, and we can be down. Man, once again, support your homeboy on Patreon, www.patreon.com/thefix, where it go down. Hey, man, two fingers in the air like a player, because, you know, we just don't care. And I am up, out, up, yeah! Yeah.
Peace. I am the greatest.
I called the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
Gonna rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one that can match me.